Good morning, Fraser. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
I'm very well. I was laughing last night when I was looking at the questions because I had no idea what any of them were speaking about because I don't run. So I'm interested to see what I can learn today. And I think it's really exciting. People got very excited when they knew you were coming on, by the way.
Good. I mean, not everybody has to be a runner in this life. And I have like-minded people, but I have a lot of people who don't, not interested in running, and you know, they're also very good friends, so it's not something that you have to do in life.
Yeah, and I feel like I can listen to a whole podcast about it and still not want to go for a run, right?
What?
Well, let's see how I feel by the end of this. So tell us a bit about your running career, please.
So as a good Luxembourg boy, I started off with a football club, the local football club, and was horrific. And the trainer actually said to my mum, I think Fraser needs glasses, he can't see the ball. And that quickly ended that, and I played some cricket, squash here in Luxembourg. Mm-hmm. And it was only in my later sort of teenage years that I started running, and then university brought it out big and preparing to join the army, and I was in what's called the officer training corps in the British Army. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, running then really, I got the bug. I got the bug okay. Big time when I was just passing like 20 or something.
Yeah.
And then joining the army, it went from pastime to, you know, doing it every day and racing a lot. Mm-hmm. and then just getting better. And it was literally, I'm a natural runner and a very good runner. And it's just been a part of me since then.
Were you born with it? Like, were you that toddler that was like speeding through the park kind of thing? And is that something that you think was in your blood?
Definitely running around a lot and running into walls as well. Okay. And, you know, there's one story of me running into a wall. I didn't see it. I just ran straight on. But hey, that's what you do as a kid. But I am a very energetic person. I'm very, very, I like to be outdoors. I like to be doing stuff. And so running came naturally.
Do you come from a family of runners?
No, I don't. Okay. So daddy played rugby. Mum's not sporty at all, but she's very, very active. You know, can't sit still either.
Okay, so there's like this sort of restless bug in all of you.
Yeah, exactly.
So the questions that came in were very interesting, and I will start with the one which I have heard more often than not. How do you fight boredom on long runs?
That's a really good question, because I am not bored on a run.
You're not?
It's my downtime, it's my me time, it's my de-stressing time, but it's also my organisation time to really, you know, put some things in boxes in your mind, and, you know.
Is that what you're doing when you're running?
Oh, it is. It's giving me goosebumps now. When I go out for runs, it gives me time to really, really sort out my life, give me new energy, give me ideas. I'm able to, you know, find things. And it's just like some people have to be in an office, have a piece of paper in front of them and write things down and organise themselves like this. A lot of times when I have to sort out a problem in my mind, whether it be a personal thing or somebody with a friend or somebody said something, you know, us humans can be just weird with each other. Mm. You know, you go out for a run and you de-stress, and then afterwards you'll be a lot happier to phone this person and, you know, converse with them because you've been able to play through a situation. But then other things I do is I listen to podcasts and I listen to music. Jaybirds, be it punk, rock, AC/DC, you know, techno, just to keep you going there as well.
Nice. So for people that would like to try your method of organising their lives while they run, do you have a list of things that you want to work through just before you start running, or is it just like natural, let your brain just sort of free flow?
I dream. I let my brain free flow.
Nice.
And it's weird, the stuff you start thinking about, and sometimes you're on a flow, but sometimes, you know, damn it, I am mad about something. This is really peed me off, and you go out for a run and you just be able to sort it out, and you come back, you're just on another planet, you feel a lot better. I have recently also gone through different phases when I've been out for a run and I've only been able to think about one problem, and it's gone like, is this a changing time in my life that I'm going to stop running because I can't absorb these problems in a run? And in the long term, I still adore running. There was just one other thing. If it's about boredom as well, a lot of the time it helps get a running buddy, go two up, you know, and because then you can just talk and chat. And if it's a like-minded person, you're going to get through your runs so quickly without even noticing it.
You're not out of breath when you run that you can't chat, or it's a pace that you can chat.
Now, that is a really good thing that you said that. And this is what I've said to a lot of people who always ask me about it. When, especially for a marathon, you've got to do really subtle, easygoing tempo. So you your heart rate's not to be, mustn't go up too high, because you're looking at longevity of the run. And if the run, the quicker you run, the more tired you'll get. So the long runs, and we will speak about this later in the podcast, the long runs, if you're running with somebody else and you're talking to them, that means your heart rate is actually quite low, and you're not going to go, if you're not able to talk to them when running, you're running too fast.
Nice.
So it's a very, very natural, good indicator. So for instance, I've got a friend who's had a heart problem. He's had a heart operation, and initially, and still now, he has to keep his heart rate so low. So we're just chatting, and we know if we're chatting, it's going to be all right.
Really good tip. How do you stay consistent?
Discipline. Discipline, but variety as well. Variety in your runs, variety in locations, variety in the tempo and the intensity of your runs, because that's going to then motivate you to go on to the next run. If you're always running the same loop, you're going to get bored.
Mm-hmm.
But I think consistency is one of the key success principles you need for getting your sub 4 hour, or making your, getting below 45 minutes for a 10K run. Because if you haven't got that consistency in planning your running, post running, if you re-energizing, and also having that consistent speed is really, really important for a marathon.
Mm-hmm.
So we were talking before, we were talking about sort of long runs and the tempo you need. Really, for a marathon, that your long runs, you're looking at a 5 minute pacing, depending on what speed you want to run at the end. But you've got to stay consistent on that.
Mm-hmm.
And the way to stay consistent there is also using a heart rate monitor. They have alarms on them, and that will beep when you're going too fast. You can set alarms on your watch, your running watch, to say you're running too fast or too slow.
Mm-hmm.
And that's also a way of staying consistent in speed, running speed.
Okay. That actually made me think of another question to ask you, which was, what is your ritual when you run? What's something that you do before and after the run?
That's really funny. I don't have a ritual.
You don't have a ritual?
No, I have become, sometimes I've been very ill-disciplined, and I've just popped in at home and, okay, you've got an hour to get out for a run, and then you're just checking something, you've just done this, and then time's going away. And so rituals are actually really good.
Well, I thought they would help with consistency.
Exactly, they would.
Yeah.
One ritual is actually sometimes get up, take a banana and go for a run, first thing you do, because then the run's out of the way. Mm-hmm. Because if it's later on in the day, it gets more difficult, you've got other things. If you've done it first thing, you're energised for the rest of the day, you're on cloud number nine, mm-hmm. you're ready to hit, anything can hit you in the world, but you've done that run, so you're feeling great.
Yeah, I had a coach who told me to start exercising first thing in the morning before your brain wakes up. So before your brain realises what it's doing, just go. Just put your shoes on and just go.
The downside to it and the disadvantage is that your body's not awake. So
okay.
You could maybe potentially put stresses on your body because you're not awake. But it's you've got to try it. There's loads of tactics and tips. You've got to try them.
Runners and athletes speak about hitting a wall when it comes to physical challenges. How do you push through it? That's Matthias' question, by the way.
Thank you, Matty. great question. And every runner is going to hit a wall sometimes. So what is hitting the wall? Hitting the wall is, in a marathon, you've got to run 42 kilometres, and after 25 kilometres, it can come earlier, after 25 kilometres, 30 kilometres, your glycogen level in your body, this is your energy, is going to be getting low. It's going to be depleted, etc. When you've hit rock bottom, it's like a wall is there and you can't, you're going to hit the wall and you're going to stop. So what is it? It's your legs are going to be heavy, your mind's not going to be there anymore. And what's worse is you can get cramps
mm-hmm.
when running. And that is when you're in big trouble.
Mm-hmm.
So it's happened to me. It's happened to me in Luxembourg, a very, very warm year. It's happened to me in Frankfurt. It happened in London as well. I was running down coming towards Big Ben, and that was it. I was cramping up, and you know, afterwards, even running down from Buckingham Palace into the finish line, you're cramping up there, and it's tough. It's really tough. So how to push through it? A, if you prepare yourself and say, look, I might hit the wall, mm-hmm. and visualize it, yes, I wouldn't stop, never stop. And, you know, actually, the biggest top tip is don't let it happen. So how you're not going to let it happen is by energizing during your run. So one of the top tips is also have a gel at the start line. Have a gel straight away. And that's already going to sort of get your body to start thinking, I need to get fuel into me all the time. And I say, you know, every half an hour, get some energy bar down you, get a gel down you. All the stops you've got, grab a banana. And then later on in the race, you know, if you've got the last 10 kilometers, they have Coca-Cola, mm-hmm. drink that as well. And it's just about them feeding your body with stuff. So
every half an hour?
Every half an hour.
Nice.
And this is stuff you actually have to train on your long runs.
Okay.
So these are things, if you're a first time marathon on Saturday and you haven't trained this, don't worry. It's, you know, you're not going to be able to train this in this week, but it's, if it's in the back of your head to say, look, when there are the stops, I need to drink and eat. Yeah, you've got to do that.
Okay, good. Other than the physical changes that we see in a runner's body, what are the mental changes that one goes through or you went through in training, but also in competing?
Running's just given me a lot of zen and karma in my life. Really been allowed, made me a better person and also a more chilled out person, just to settle me, because I am such an energetic person. And so the mental change, yeah, it's giving me more structure. It's, I notice when I'm not doing physical exercise, mm-hmm. my body's like yelling and it's all more frustrated, and you're not that person you want to be, because you're missing the dopamines, the happy feelings and the endorphins that you get from running, mm-hmm. from that runner's high. Mm-hmm. So how does it change mentally? I think the more you get into running, the more it can become that drug. But the better your body gets in feeding off these endorphins, because it does, I think, I might be wrong, it does take a body time to sort of adapt to these physical exertions and to for it to sort of connect and sort of, you know, when is a run high. Most people get them, some people won't. I've tried to coach people and some people just don't get it. Mm-hmm. Other people's are just, they're hooked.
Is that addiction? The addiction to the rush of endorphins, do you think? Or is it addiction to the feeling of running?
It's the endorphins.
It's the endorphins,
so
okay.
This is a fun fact. Mm. I can't remember which book I read it. I think it might have been The Real Happy Pill, or it was Born to Run or something. But endorphins are akin to morphine, okay? That's how strong endorphins are. And this book, The Real Happy Pill, was also about what does sport give us and what does physical exertion give us. It gives us natural de-stressing and, a push-up drug, which my body gives it to me for nothing.
What's the name of that book?
It's The Real Happy Pill.
Okay, I'm going to write that down.
Epic.
Really?
Great read.
Nice. How important is weight training in your preparation?
It's not to be neglected, but it's not that important. So I think in a marathon training program, your most important elements are the long runs and then your tempo runs in between. But there's a few elements to any physical exertion or physical sport you're doing. You've got, especially for running, you've got, they call it endurance, speed, flexibility and strength. So this question would be strength. And it's all about once a week, 20 minutes, it's doing squats, Hungarian squat thruts. There's also something called the clamshell for these weird muscles you have here, but they're so important. And core stability, actually, yes. Still, the more core stability you have, the better you're going to hold yourself on a run, mm-hmm. and the more upright you're going to be, because that core stability is really, really important. So there's also pelvic lifts you can do, and side-lying leg raises. These are all exercises you can do once a week, 20 minutes and that's it. That's, you don't have to do it too much.
That's all you need, really.
And yeah, there's nothing with weights. You don't have to go to the gym.
Okay. What is the best way to eat and fuel for runs? I know you've already touched upon the gels during the runs, but what about, you know, beforehand? Because the next question is actually, is it true that you should eat a bucket of spaghetti before you run? If not, what should you eat?
The before is very important, and you're looking at 3 to 4 hours before, so you've got time to digest it. But also, it's not just that one, the 4 hours before, it's the day before. And then actually, let's wind it back even further. It's actually straight away after your run for the next one. If you don't fuel after your run and you're tired, and your body is going to be, won't perform the next day. And if there's a golden hour, I find that when your metabolism is very high, because sport does that to you, physical exertion will push up your metabolism, and your metabolism will be at a high rate, like in the morning, to take on fuel and take on those nutrients that your body needs after you've done that physical exertion. So how to prepare food-wise and fuel-wise, straight after your run, always fuel, be it, you know, some fruit, a yogurt, or even a main meal. I used to do that. My Saturday long runs, I would straight away, back in the time when I was in the army, I'd literally make sure I got back to brunch in the officer's mess and have a full English within 20 minutes of finishing, you know, just to get that fuel back into preparing for the next one. But why the spaghetti? It's carbohydrates. Okay. It's carbohydrates you need. But then that's me. There are also other runners who don't use carbohydrates anymore, and they've defied science and done a totally different thing. The sort of carbohydrate spaghetti thing is a very, I think, 80s, 90s thing. And we've now seen vegan runners and, you know, people who just go on protein and they don't eat that many carbs.
What do you eat before? So
I need carbs, okay. Potatoes, pasta. Okay. My ideal one is before the race day. I mean, race day is exactly 4 hours before. I will have about 100 grams of pasta.
And you would only eat anything for 4 hours. So, because I'm thinking, how long should your stomach be like? When should be the last time you eat before you run?
I don't think there should be, because I'd have a banana an hour before.
Okay.
Because I'm constantly just making sure I've got those the quick. You've got two types of fuel your body has. You've got your store, glycogen store, and then you've got the immediate sugars that you've from the food you've just eaten. So there's also your fat store as well that you don't really want to start using, and that's something your body trains, and that's very scientific. But so before the marathon, 4 hours before, I'll have a main meal, and then 1 hour before, I'll definitely be having a banana or something.
Mm-hmm. For an amateur to run the marathon in under 4 hours, how much training are we talking about?
Not that much, actually.
Okay.
I think if they've done a few races, they're not quite an amateur anymore. Let's say, for instance, they've been running for a year, or maybe 2 years, and they've now decided to do the marathon. If you're going to do a four-hour marathon, that's about a roughly 11 kilometre per hour pace. In kilometre pace, it's about a 5:30 pace.
Mm.
You're looking at 4 to 5 runs a week, maybe a sixth run if you want to. And you're looking for about a total mileage per week, varying from 50 to maybe 70 when your long runs are getting there. So you're looking about, I'd say, 3 runs that are your smaller runs in the week to keep your legs going, your speed runs where we call them tempo runs. And you're looking about 8, 12 kilometres, 10 kilometres, maybe up to 15. Do 3 of those a week, and then you'd have your long run either at the weekend or whenever you've got time for that, and you're looking at 20, 25, 30 kilometres. So that's going to give you that variety of, at the beginning of your 12-week programme, you're going to be about around 50 kilometres per week, and then you might take it up to 80 kilometres. Because when you're looking at sub 3 hours, you're looking at a total kilometre mileage of 120 kilometres a week, and you're looking at, sometimes you'll be doing double days where you'll go out in the morning and you'll go out in the evening.
Okay, so it's a big jump from doing it under 4 to doing it under 3.
Yeah,
it's a different
big time.
League, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I'd have my training plan, and Tuesdays I would be out in the morning doing, try and hit 8 kilometres, maybe 8 kilometres, 10 kilometres, and then in the evening do another 12. Because it's all about mileage in the end of the day. It's
really?
All about investing in the bank, you know. And that was all my, that was my, you know, I'd get back home, one for the bank, you know, that's,
So really the hours and the kilometres that you kind of rack up over your training is what's going to really stand you in good stead on the day.
Yeah. The sad news is I'm not running at the weekend because I'm, A, I'm injured, and but B, I haven't been able to invest into that bank. I have not been any, I have no kilometres in my legs. There's a few runs I got out, but yeah, I think there's been, this last year with Corona and all that stuff, I, you know, I had appendicitis as well. And so.
But you're really listening to your body.
Yeah.
That's important.
I am, of course.
Yeah, you're not letting and, the kind of like the ego or the desire to do it, you know, overcome the fact that your body needs to rest.
I could compete at the weekend and just have fun and, you know, go mess around and run around, but I'd be walking at the end and I'd be cheering and I'd be mostly drinking on the course. And I don't want that to do, I'm not ready for that yet.
You don't want to leave that kind of,
No, I
get that. So the next question, maybe some tips for a good tapering plan. I have forgotten everything about racing since I was pregnant 1 year ago and before that was COVID.
Tapering, very, very, very important.
Explain what tapering is first, please.
So for the most traditional training plan goes is a 12-week training plan for a marathon. Mm-hmm. You can also do a 16-week plan.
Hayley. Wait, this is, hold on. So somebody goes from having no training to training for 16 weeks or 12 weeks and then they can run the marathon? Or you mean that they've got a relative, they've already got a good foundation of health, of fitness?
Anybody who's going to run a marathon needs to have a foundation in running. And it takes a good year, maybe 2 years to get a bit of a foundation in running. Okay. You can't get that overnight, no way. And I think to run a marathon, your first marathon in sub-4, yeah, it's doable. Potentially after 2 years, but you just need to know what is running, you know, the pain you're going to go through and all these small technicality things. So you're looking at that 12-week program, and yeah, if you want to succeed in a marathon, I would literally have a 12-week program. It doesn't have to be that structured, but you want to structure your long runs. You're looking at 6 to 7 long runs is a minimum for any marathon.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you're looking at, so if you've got a 12-week program, the maximum is 10 long runs. But if you get 10 long runs in, you're going to be ready. But again, your body's going to have gone through a lot of stress through that training program. And you're going to be injury prone. That is always the difficult part in a program.
Mm-hmm.
But so you're looking at the last 10 days, 2 weeks, you're going to be tapering. That means you don't want to put any too much pressure on your body. You want to be energizing. You want to be, you don't want to be putting any pressure and using any energy up so that when you're on that start line of the marathon, you're ready to rock and roll. So what does it mean? It means, you know, you're faffing around. You're doing 2 kilometres, 3 kilometres, 4 kilometres, 5 kilometres. You're not doing too much. You're not going to, for me, the week before I'd still be running up to 10 kilometres, but not more.
Mm-hmm.
I have done some crazy training programs and it's worked, but you really don't want to be exerting too much. And then also the tapering plan is also about a lot of sleep, making sure you're sleeping well. You know, if you've got a stressful job, maybe take a few days off before the marathon. If it's at a weekend, take the Friday off, even the Thursday. Really invest into it.
Mm-hmm.
Because otherwise, if you've got a full day at the office on the Friday, you know, you're going to be stressed there potentially and you're not going to perform. But then there's also the eating.
Yes.
So when you're used to, if you're a carb eater like me, you're used to punching and thrashing a lot of carbs down your neck, down your grid. The week prior, and this is, you want to lay off the carbs for a few days, absolutely lay off, so that the 3 days before when you start carb loading, this is one of those running, marathon runner buzzwords, when you start carb loading, your body then switches on and goes, oh great, I'm getting carbs, I'm going to start putting them into my stores. And you're going to start storing energy ready for the marathon. And that's really important when tapering. So really, tapering is all about just enjoying it, not putting yourself under too much stress. I wouldn't put a watch on either. I'd just go out and do a few runs. And, you know, really, as soon as you start feeling tired, you know, head back home. I've also, on race day in Luxembourg, the race is at 7 o'clock in the evening.
Mm-hmm.
most races, most marathons are in the morning about 11 o'clock, 10 o'clock start. It depends. Not many of them are run in the afternoon, really.
Mm-hmm.
Depends. But this one being at 7 o'clock in the evening, I used to go out for 2 kilometres on the Saturday morning of race
on the same day.
Over the same day. Just a brief run up there. And then clearly you're going to do your preparations before the race as well.
Yeah.
But it was just because I was just full of energy and just testing the legs, just giving me that bit of a security feeling.
So interesting, because I would think that it would make, you know, that, oh, you should store your reserves and not run on the day, you know, try and rest as much as you can. But you like to just kind of go out and get...
2 kilometres is nothing.
Yeah.
At the end, because I was used to running, a standard run would be easily 15 kilometres. 20 kilometres, that was your standard pace. I was easily able to absorb those kind of runs. So 2 kilometres in that morning would be fine.
You do, it'd be like a little stretch for you.
Yeah,
really.
Exactly. You just do a bit of stretching as well. Yes. And then there's not too much pressure on just before the race when you're going to do your run-ups and do all that kind of stuff. But also, you'd go back home and then you'd rest anyway. You'd be back on the couch and just reading a book and just chilling out there.
When should your last long run be before the day of the race?
Your last long run is going to be about 10 days before. Some people can do it a week before. For a long run, if you look at your long runs, are looking at 25 kilometres to 30 kilometres, sometimes 32, 34 kilometres. And your body takes 2 days, 3 days to recover from those, really.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then you're going to start tapering, and then you've got to start the carb loading. So I think 9 days before, 10 days, 9 days, 8 days before. It depends what your timetable is like as well.
Mm-hmm.
Depends if there's marathons on the Sunday, the Saturday, and it depends how you work as well. Depends what maybe family obligations are on that weekend. But definitely don't wait till too late.
Mm-hmm.
Optimum is like 9, 10 days before, and you know, then it's out of the way.
Mm-hmm.
And my secret to success, ice baths.
Okay.
Literally, train your body and your mind to get into that painful ice bath that you're looking about between 10 and 15 degrees, and it really gets your body to calm down, your legs, you're preventing injuries. Afterwards, there's a massive flow of nutrients and blood flow into your bodies. And it's also to, when you've got an injury, inflammation, it calms down in any inflammation in your body. And it helps recovery. So it really helps you recover.
So you would do that when you get home after the race?
After my long run.
After my long runs. Okay.
So I didn't have I wouldn't have a pre-run ritual.
Mm-hmm.
I'd have a post-run ritual. And that would be ice bath and then, you know, a meal.
That's actual ice from your freezer going into your bathtub.
So, you know, you've got about 3 or 4 trays of ice into the... it's not very friendly for what we're asking to be done nowadays with water preservation and all this kind of stuff.
Right.
So actually what I did was I'd use that water to water my tomato plant. So, yeah, weird. You know, us runners do some weird things, especially me. So I'd have this water, I'd leave it in the bath for
a
week.
Just feed the
and I'd literally get I'd get my watering cans from outside from the balcony, fill those up, and then,
oh, you are funny. okay, so somebody wants to know about, more specifically about you. They are interested to know how many months you need to prepare for a specific race, i.e. how many races can Fraser do in 1 year?
I used to run any race I could get to, and I was not injured, I would be running. So when I was back in the army, I'd train with my club, Aldershot Farnham and District, when I was based near there. So that was when I was at Sandhurst, and also when I was at a training school. Tuesday evenings, we'd train hard. Wednesday would be either an army cross-country race or a orienteering race.
Mm-hmm.
So they would alternate between the two weeks. And then at the weekend, I'd have the civvy. The army people always tend to say they're not civilians, they're military. So I'd have my civvy races at the weekend, and they would be your cross country races, but they might also be half marathons, all this kind of stuff. What is really important in your training plan, and be it that 12-week training plan, is to incorporate a half marathon, maybe, and a 10k road race, maybe two 10k road races, and a half marathon. Not too many. Mm-hmm. I could potentially say that I did too much some years in my training program, but it's what makes you feel happy. If you're happy and you're getting stuff, because you do develop in a race as well.
Mm-hmm.
But you can deplete yourself and make yourself tired, and you're prone to injury. But so I must have done some years where I've done 30 races easily.
Whoa.
You know, if not one a week, but every second week.
Crazy.
Easy, yes.
Crazy.
And but because it's also that buzz, and it's your friends, and you know the people in that milieu, and it's just so much fun. But it does create a stress, and it's. But also, what's important is your ritual that you need to have before your marathon.
Mm-hmm.
I was speaking to friends just yesterday about my ritual that I had here in Luxembourg. So I would, you've got to go to the loo. You've got to go to the loo before a marathon. There's that famous race, Paula Radcliffe, when she stopped in London, had to. I don't know if it was a number one or a number two she did.
I think it was number two. It was a number one, I think.
So, no, I don't think it was a number
really?
One.
Really?
Because normally for number one, you just keep running and you just wee your pants.
Yeah, I've done that before. I thought there were photos of her.
And so I remember in Afghanistan or when I ran a marathon, what's called the US Marine Corps Marathon Forward. They'd have the same marathon over in the States and in Camp Leatherneck near Bastion, in Helmand Province, the US Marine Corps organised a marathon there. And I was so far ahead that I could just jump into a porta loo and have a pit stop. But really, you don't want to be having one of those during your marathon. So it's important to train your body to go to the loo there. So my ritual was actually, people are going to lie. It's a secret to success. I would go in there, I'd go and poo in the woods. Because there would be no queues for the porta cabins, you know, and it was great. I'd take the tissues back, and you know, I'm not going to litter in the woods. But lo and behold,
oh my God.
Who appeared when I was crouched down having a poo? It was the two Hanna twins. They've been invited here to Luxembourg. They're two German girls, twins, very very good runners. They've been to the Olympics before. And they had the same thing in mind as I did. And then I was just down there crouching down.
God.
And then lo and behold, they appeared there crouching down. It's hilarious.
Oh my God, they probably wouldn't want you saying that on air.
It don't matter.
So funny. Okay, so that brings me to my final question, Fraser. How has your running career enriched your life?
I wouldn't be the person I am now with... I wouldn't be doing the sort of job I do and have that fulfillment in life. It's a bit of a religion.
Mm-hmm.
It is. It's a bit of a religion, and just pitching up to a race and you all your buddies are there, shaking hands, hugging each other. Hey, how are you doing? Blah, blah, blah. So what's life up to? And then at the bar afterwards, you know, shower. If you're sneaky, you'll get a beer and then you'll take that to the shower already. But then it's everybody gets to the bar afterwards, and you're having a touring and your beer. And this is where you just get this fulfillment in life. You're doing something correct, and you've got a posse around you. There's the Fat Betty runners in town, who they're Luxembourg's running crew.
Mm-hmm.
A lot. They're like what used to be the Hash House Harriers in the UK,
mm-hmm.
and they're just a wild bunch of people who whoop and shout and scream and, you know, have a great fun time. And I like to go running with them. And these are the things in life that running, don't do it in the gym. Go out into the woods, especially springtime when you're out. So many times I see a deer or something, and it just brings you back down to earth. To see an animal out there, a wild animal, a deer, so many people don't see these animals because they're office people and their gym people, and so many times I've even sometimes tried stalking them, you know, run after them just to see what they do and, you know, keep up with them and scare the poor animal. But just these are those kind of things. And but I've also had such enlightening things in when running. I was in Burkina Faso visiting a friend. I'd gotten back from Afghanistan in the spring, and it's 2012, and she was working out there, and I was reading the book Born to Run, really really cool book, and they were talking about Africans wearing these plimsolls, plastic plimsolls. You know those plastic shoes that small kids get at the beach? You can buy them there.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, some runners ran in those to train their foot as well, and to train this running style. And the bus had broken down as I was travelling in. I was coming up down from the south of the country, from a place called Bobo Dioulasso, and the bus had broken down. And I was reading my book outside, and lo and behold, this young chap ran past in exactly those plastic sandals. And I was like, what a coincidence. Is there some running god looking down at me and everything? And I finished the book in the airport in Marrakesh at 6 o'clock in the morning between two flights. And I was in tears. I was very, very emotional. And that's what running is as well. Paula Radcliffe always said that running a marathon is like a rose. You've got the stem, which is the whole path, but then you've got the ups and downs, which are the thorns. And at the top of it, you've got a beautiful rose when you've finished. And that is, marathon running is the king's distance, or let's call it the queen's distance as well. It is absolutely the just such sheer grandeur, the investment you have to put in, but also that path you're going to lead on that day as well is quite difficult. You're mm-hmm. They're going to be emotions. You're going to have, if you're lucky, and that's a nice thing here in Luxembourg. You've got friends on the course.
Mm-hmm.
It is
that feeling
so heartwarming, and you go, oh, I've got these people. I've been quite emotional sometimes. I'm like, all these people shouting, that's just amazing. It's just wow. And Luxembourg is really pretty anyway for the course. It's a difficult course. A lot of people to do a sub-4 here in Luxembourg. Good luck to anybody at the weekend trying to do it. It's going to be difficult, but if you've done the preparation, it's going to be fine. But so it's really enriched my life, running has. It just has also given me that get up and go ability.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also made me that more creative and dynamic person to be able to think on my feet and have a zest for life that comes from those endorphins and from running.
I see that. I see that in the way you speak about it. You've inspired me to put my shoes on. I can't guarantee that I'm going to do a marathon in this lifetime, but you've inspired me at least to put my shoes on and go running in the woods.
Yeah, and yeah, go in the woods.
Yeah.
But again, if Matty runs or you've got female friends, it's also a way of bonding with other people.
Yeah.
And seeing, you know, some friends I only get to see when I go out for a run with him, and it's just, damn it, I haven't seen you in a few weeks. Let's go for a run. And there's one mate, we go out at 6 o'clock in the morning, and, you know, yeah, at least I've seen him there.
Yeah.
So the Marathon des Sables, when I ran that, also what a journey that was. And that was not just a 12-week training program. That we were starting long runs with equipment, even, I think, 6 months before.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's another level. You're doing 250 kilometres in 7 days through the Saharan Desert with all your kit. You just get water, and tentage is what's supplied. But I remember one evening, I think it was the Paris Philharmonic, some classical music ensemble came to play to us in the desert out there. And it was, I was looking up the stars, and it was, these are moments you will never, ever forget.
Wow.
And also, I remember coming in from the marathon stage and absolutely just, the pressure you'd put yourself on mm-hmm. under for 6 months, knowing you're going out to do the Marathon des Sables, was just so big, and I could let go, and I was crying. I was absolutely just, I couldn't stop myself. But I knew I'd made it, I'd done it. All I had was the next day was the small 21
mm-hmm.
half marathon, and I could really go out and enjoy that.
Amazing. Thank you so much for sharing your wisdom with us, Fraser. Obviously, running has done huge things for you, and I'm sure for people listening, you've really given them some good tips. So thank you.
Thank you very much, Marina. And yeah, as I said before, good luck to anybody this weekend. I will be on the course absolutely clapping my hands off. I'll almost be getting dizzy. I remember seeing the the London Marathon and watching people pass there and shouting their names and you just get dizzy. But go for it, guys. You know, it is going to be amazing.
Amazing. Thank you so much.